time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to another special episode of Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined today by Andrew Whitaker.
What's up, everybody?
And 40K champion Mike Twitchell.
Hey guys.
Yo man, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
We haven't done too many of these, but I really want to do a player spotlight, especially someone who has finished in the champion bracket at all three major events I've done over the last couple of years.
Yeah, Paul and I were talking about this, especially after last year's Warzone result and then this year, and then you go all the way back to spring of 15, I guess, right, with the Forge the Narrative seasonal. Mike Twitchell is he's a 40K celebrity down south, one of the most beat stick guys in this region, kind of well-known across the country. We thought it would be a good idea to take the time to let all the Forge the Narrative listeners hear him, hear his thoughts, get his take on not only Warzone Atlanta, not only just list building, but the state of competitive 7th edition 40K. We brought him in. We're going to do this interview style. Ask Twitch some questions, and hopefully it will not only be beneficial for the listeners who are trying to glean some tactics and tips, but also be a good way to kind of talk about the event some more.
And maybe I can teach you a few things too, Andrew, huh?
Unlikely, sir. Very unlikely.
Thanks again for joining us. It is because you've got an approach to building lists. I mean, you have been competitive throughout the editions, so you're not just good at 7th or, you know, good at 5th or whatever. You're good at Warhammer 40K and really attacking. And I'm using, maybe I'm saying that too aggressive. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you kind of attack the format to whatever event that you're attending to at least to always do well.
That's what I try to do. I think that you look at whenever I try to go attend an event, I think you, or anybody does, I think it's important for them to establish whatever goal that they want to try to achieve at that event. And that doesn't always necessarily mean winning. I mean, it can mean getting best painted or getting best sport or just having a good time. But I think establishing a goal before you go to any tournament, I think is step one.
Before we kind of delve into your take, obviously you're a goal-oriented guy. And I've had that conversation with you offline a number of times. But before we get into that, I kind of want to develop some list building philosophy with you and for the listeners who maybe don't know you or know anything about you. But just in the last three major events that I have played in with you and against you, you have played a Lion's Blade Gladius spam with Land Speeders. That was at ATC last year.
Right.
At Warzone last year. What did you play Warzone last year?
Played it was three aspect host with 54 swooping hawks.
That's right. It was a 54 swooping hawks. So you went from a big Lion's Blade Razorback spam to 54 swooping hawks at last year's Warzone. Then this year at ATC, you had a 9 or 10 Imperial Flyer list. You had 10 Imperial Flyers.
Right. Yeah, that was ATC. It was one Storm Raven and 9 Talons.
And then this year at Warzone, you brought 54 Screamers and a Demonic Incursion list with another 24 Nurglings. And so from the outside world looking in, you have, in my opinion, I think you are the best, and I mean this not in any kind of pejorative or derogatory way, you play some people call them spam. I call them overwhelming style. Like you overwhelm a particular tactic, and you play that list better than anyone else in the country, I think. Do you think that that just fits your style, or do you think that that's truly the best way to build competitive 40K lists? And I hope you understand that what I mean by that question.
Oh, for sure. I don't think it's the best way, but it is my style. That's how I approach, you know, 40K. I think developing your own style helps you play better. That, like my teammate Horton has always liked a one-dimensional list of Khorne. I mean, he plays a lot of Flesh Hounds, has done all that kind of thing. That's his style. My style, how I've always enjoyed playing, is having a pretty mobile army, usually in the shooting realm. This year was a little something different, but I think developing that style, I think, is certainly important. But I don't think it's necessarily the best way. I think there's lots of good ways. If you're just staying competitive 40K, I mean, there's, you know, the Death Star builds and stuff are very, very competitive. A lot of the really shooty Eldar builds are very, very competitive. I think there's lots of ways to do that. But overwhelming a tactic or attacking a phase in the game is generally how I choose to do it.
If you don't compete in other phases, it is best to be the best at the phases you do compete in.
For sure.
And I think that in this game, I think there's a lot of randomness in the roles. There really are a lot of roles for things in the game. And anytime you can build in more redundancy into your list, I think that's a good thing. I mean, Andrew, you said spam earlier, but I don't, that almost has its own connotation to it. And I think redundancy is exactly where you want to be right now in 40K. Twitch, do you agree?
Yes. I think, honestly, it also makes, you have to concentrate on less things in a game when you have one main unit. Like this year it was Screamers. They have one main unit that does one main thing. It makes decision making in the game sometimes easier because I only have one way to approach something. Is either in this case to run away, to slash it, or assault it. I mean, there's only the Screamers that can only do so much.
I didn't mean to say, you know, spamming is kind of the best way to articulate it to somebody who's maybe uninitiated about.
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. I just wanted to kind of frame it. The redundancy, I think, is a big part of the game right now on the competitive level.
It also, spamming whatever, also really, really eliminates or makes target priority a real big problem for your opponent. When it doesn't really matter what they shoot at, can actually get very frustrating, especially if they have a super unit, you know, that can, you know, and the town hall is all over the place. You know, great, you killed three Screamers, congratulations, rather than wiping out another town hall or an Imperial Knight or a Death Star or whatever.
So it's interesting that you mentioned the town hall, because, you know, a lot of people, a lot of hot takes on the internet about Warzone generally. But one of the big ones, I think, again, from the uninitiated, is that the Super Tuna, quote unquote, ran the event or showed up and had this overwhelming thing that the meta wasn't prepared for. You know, I have my opinions on that, but I'd like to get yours. You know, as a guy who knew the Tuna was coming, has played against the Super Tuna a number of times, what's your take on that unit and other similar large-scale gargantuan creatures, and what do you think their place should be in the 40K competitive meta?
Well, I think I'd qualify everything I'll say by saying that I enjoy playing all formats. So I think if Warzone next year didn't allow them, I'd still come. If they allowed multiples, I'd still be there. It would change how I approach the event for sure. But I think understanding the meta is very, very important wherever you are, whether it's at a local game store and you got your buddy to beat, or you're going to a big tournament when you don't know what you're going to face. And certainly in this event, you have to, if you think through what kind of things will be out there, Imperial Knights, the Taunar, Brass Scorpion, all those kind of things are on my list of things to be able to deal with. And if you don't build a list properly to deal with it, then whoever goes first can win, especially in a event with unmodified D, which I mean, I agree with you, Andrew. You and me have talked a lot about, you know, 7th edition, that's what it is. And I think it's there for a reason. And I enjoy that environment, but you do have to pay attention to it and build your list accordingly. And I don't particularly like to lose a game if I lose the roll to go first and half my armor gets blown off the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like you said, we have talked about it a lot. That's why I show up with null deploy drop pod lists and a lot of the most recent GTs I've played in, because it doesn't matter if I go first or second. I'm either going to get to alpha strike you or you're going to be shooting at an empty table board. And it sounds like, you know, you have catered to that style. Before we move on from the Tuna, though, I want to kind of abstract it away from the event itself.
Sure.
In 2015, Warzone 2015, five of the top eight lists had Wraith Knights in them. And Warzone 2016, five of the top eight lists had Super Tunas. Everyone is freaking out. We're not freaking out. There's a lot of commentary about the Taunar being present so heavily in the top 10 lists at Warzone. Do you think that it's an overreaction? Do you think that people are just, they've forgotten that the Wraith Knight was in the exact same spot the year before and they just give it a pass because it's old hat now? And more particularly, how do you think that 40K competitive players are going to accept the march forward to allowing more of these big units?
I think in both of those cases, both of those units are undercosted in 40K. The town are significantly undercosted. So that's why I think you see them in the top tables. And there were plenty of Wraith Knights running around the room this time. That doesn't mean they can't be beaten, or that doesn't mean that everybody should or should not play them. It's just a fact that you know, the town are compared to other super heavies, probably is, in my opinion, 300 or 400 points undercosted.
Wow. Okay. Wow. That's a not inconsequential sum of points.
No, I mean, and I might be wrong on that, but I mean, if you compare that to the other Titans that are out in the game right now, and the Revenant and some of the Tyranid monsters, creatures and stuff that have really old rules, it's not even close.
I definitely agree.
And so now whether the other ones are just undercost or overcosted, that's a possibility as well. But to your point on acceptance of it, I think until you actually sit down and play a few games and understand what it can and can't do and how easy it is to lock it in combat for a while and those kind of things, it's scary. And I won't lie, when I walked up to both those tables and had to deal with two of them in games 4 and 5, you instantly have to think about it and you have to deal with what it is capable of doing.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because you did play them on table 4 and table 5, and won both of those games convincingly, which is why you have your own player interview special on Forge the Narrative, because you're kind of a big deal. That's all I'm saying.
I appreciate it. There's lots of other factors that go into that, but I appreciate that.
Well, it's actually funny you mentioned that, because as a guy who's now won 3 of the last 4, or at least won one of the major prizes, be it best Battlemaster or best overall, at 3 of the last 4 major GTs that I've attended, how do you kind of perceive, is there the element of, is it just matchup luck? Is it dice luck? Is it list? Is it practice? I mean, how much do you prep for these types of tournaments? When you go into a GT, like, how does a guy in that bracket of player skill come out the other side with a top 3 finish?
I have a guess, Mike. I want to interject. I think you bring about, 50,000 dice, and out in the parking lot, you just roll them all until you get about 50 that all only roll 6s.
Straight 6s.
Just roll 6s and win. Burn into the event, register, and play without looking up.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's the game's easy when your whole army has a 5-up invul save and you roll 6s.
That's right. Although instability tests don't love 6s, so I don't know if that's the plan.
Never in that situation. Time. You never.
That's true. That's true.
I'm kidding, Mike. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, of course. I think the first thing I would say is that there is no amount of preparation or theory crafting or practice or whatever, I mean, that can automatically win you an event. There always is an element of luck. There's an element of matchups and things that are just completely terrain, things that are completely out of a player's control. And the terrain at Warzone was phenomenal. I mean, a lot of it was the same at ATC. I have no complaints at all, but certainly some boards have a little more line of sight blocking than others. And that can matter. I played Andrew Gagneau in the 4th round, and I think that if I would have played him in any other round other than the 4th round mission, I would have either pretty much automatically lost or been playing from behind from the beginning. And that was just luck of the how we ended up. But as far as prep work, my teammate Horton Doughton and I spend a lot of time on the phone, driving back and forth to work and stuff, and just talking through matchups. Both of us are very busy, don't get to play very much, as much as I would like, for sure. But there's a lot of that if you're, can accept criticism and work back and forth with your teammates and friends, you can really get through a lot of a 40K strategy that way.
I think that's a pretty awesome admonition to anybody. If you have a good, Horton is a good friend of the show. He knows good friends with me and Paul as well. It's nice to have those kinds of friends and those relationships to soundboard ideas off of. And with that in mind, I want to kind of ask a couple of questions. One is, at the Forge Narrative Seasonal almost 2 full years ago now, you won best overall and Thomas Bird won Battlemaster. Fast forward 2 years, and you won Battlemaster and he won best overall at Warzone 2016. Do you and Thomas have an interest? Do you guys have a little rivalry going? And talk maybe a little bit about the Borderlands team and the
General Staff
Squad.
I think you're trying to start one.
I'm just saying it's an interesting rub, because I know that you have traveled to Atlanta and our crew has gone up to Greenville a number of times, and it's always great games. It's always competitive. Do you relish particular opponents more than others? Do you have that kind of grudge? Elbow to the rib cage about like, oh, I finished ahead of you type situations.
Well, it's always good to have people, and you guys have spoken before on your show that, it's always good to see people when you haven't seen them for 6 months and pick up sort of right where you left off. You have 40K in common. That's what makes going to these things so much fun. And I think the Borderlands up here in Greenville, South Carolina, the store that I support is, You know, we've got two to three teams, depending on the event, of varying skill levels and goals and stuff, and that's completely cool. And we support each other and are great friends. Go to these events, and the general staff basically has the same thing. I think you guys have like 18 or 19 teams that attend these things. but and so because of that, though, we have developed. I wouldn't even go so far as to say it's a rivalry. I think we really, you know, like to see each other do well. And certainly when we play, there's certainly competitive games. But I've never seen anything bad natured come out of any of it. And I always like to see Thomas cackling when he's beating up one of our guys or beating me up or whatever. And your team also averages like, you know, 6'11" in height. So
yes,
you can see your whole team from across the room. But this year, actually at Adepticon, Thomas is actually going to jump over and play on our team this year. So we're excited about that, about having him with us.
It's awesome. It speaks well of I think the community generally. You know, we cheer when you guys do well and vice versa. So I think that's the best kind of rivalry, if there is one, where you're like, you know, if we're not going to win it, I want those guys too.
For sure.
Well, I enjoy seeing those folks coming up to the table. Like, there's a little bit of dread, like, oh, man, I'm playing somebody I know they're good. And so you get that kind of anticipation. But then it's a guy you've been playing with and you've seen on the scene for years. And it's just, to me, that makes it even more exciting.
Sure. Well, I played Colin in round 5, and he's one of your guys. And I remember thinking when it walked up to the table, I was like, you know, sometimes in the last rounds of a tournament, things can get pretty pretty dicey and pretty serious. And Colin and I had a great game. And I remember thinking when we started the game that I'm gonna get through Warzone with having all great opponents for all 5 rounds. And that was, I think that's a testament to your guys' crew as well.
I think it's a testament to you as not – as having superhuman patience to play Colin and actually have a good game. But I do want to segue that and talk about Warzone generally and about your experience this year. You said you had 5 good games. I guess if, you know, give me the 2-minute plug as a hyper-competitive, top-end GT champion, Adepticon attendee, Mike Twitchell, what makes Warzone special to you? Why do you come back besides seeing me in super short 4-inch inseam shorts?
Well, you named the reason, so I guess
that's
you
answered it, right?
Your own question. I think the biggest thing is I think what you guys have already echoed a lot on your show is, you know, it is a party, it's a good time, and you know, there are, it's a great combination of competitive play, you know, the great meal included with it, or 2 meals included with it, on site, which actually is a big stress reliever, that you don't have to run around all over the place. Drink service there. You got a dealer's hall there. I mean, all of it is all within, you know, 10 feet of each other. Lots of space, which as a pretty big guy myself, I appreciate. And all that, I mean, terrain and tables are all good, but ultimately it's getting together with probably half that room. I can tell you their first and last names and something about them, and that's fun. I mean, it's fun to be cheering for each other in events and in certain games, and, you know, walking up and watching your friends play and all that kind of thing, and watching two friends play and cackle at each other is a good time too. So it's just a really, really good environment, and I would certainly encourage anybody around, if you haven't gone, make sure you sign up. I think tickets sold in, you know, like 8 hours this year, so get on it.
But speaking of list design and stuff, we also mentioned Adepticon. I think several of us registered for Adepticon right before we got on this call. So yes. Looking at their formats, what are some advice you might give to folks that are prepping for that event? It's a two-source, two detachment event with a Lord of War point limit, not number of Lord of Wars that you can take.
Well, that's interesting. I just learned of the format right when you said that. I hadn't even looked at it. I just signed up for it blind.
Well, with that in mind, with a 7.5-point cap on Lord of War, what would you expect to see?
Well, the source limit by itself, I think, that will be limiting. It pretty much automatically limits a lot of the real tooled up Death Stars that you can see, which, you know, you can make an argument that's good for the game. I don't necessarily care either way, but it's, you won't see a lot of the real tooled up Death Stars. The Lord of War, 700 points, I mean, are they allowing the Taunar? I mean, you know,
I haven't gone through the full list here. It says players may spend a maximum of 700 points on Lords of War. There is no restriction on the number of Lords of War that may be included, provided the sum total is 700 points or less.
Interesting.
For ease of play, Death from the Sky supplement and the psychic powers listed in Angels of Death and Traitor's Hate will not be used.
Interesting. The Death from the Skies, I understand. I mean, I would play the Flyers and enjoyed that. The dogfight phase is a little cumbersome, and the marine powers, well, I think that those are a little overblown. I think a lot of people thought those were way too powerful, but you know, it's no different. Having a Fortune Death Star is no different than having an Invisible Death Star. They're both unengageable. Either way, it doesn't really matter. But as far as that tournament format goes, I think if all of that is out, I think the off the cuff, I think eliminating those Death Stars, I think will be a big deal. I guess you can still slide in two Imperial Knights if you want to. So I would expect that to be all over the place.
Two Wraith Knights.
Two Wraith Knights as well.
Two Wraith Knights? I thought at bare bones. To which, let me ask you this. You know,
sure.
I think that the Southeast is an interesting region in terms of 40K competitiveness, mostly because until last year, Warzone didn't exist and we didn't really have a hallmark GT on which to hang our hats. You had the West Coast has BAO and LVO, the Midwest has Adepticon, East Coast and the Northeast has Nova, et cetera. A lot of these big GTs with individual players who have big accolades and kind of become internet famous. I think the Southeast, and I just kind of want to get your take on this. I mean, I think that there is a bevy of talent down here. There's guys like Paul who have historically been hugely successful at GTs. There's you, Thomas Bird. You know, I'm never going to be arrogant enough to put a guy as humble as me would never put my own name in that circle because I'm too humble to say that I'm in that conversation. But what is your take on kind of the bragging rights and the, do you have a chip on your shoulder when you go to these big out of state, like other region tournaments? And do you kind of, is that a motivating factor that says, hey, like, down south, there's some 40K players, and maybe you've never heard their names, but they're a big deal, and they win games.
Well, I think if you get to know me, I sort of like flying under the radar. I think that walking up to, I mean, I was practically laughed out of the room with 54 Hawks last year, and they won, and I like that. I think you have an advantage when you walk up to the table, and nobody has any clue of, you know, history and how long I've been playing and that kind of stuff. And my teammates are the same way. As far as the chip on my shoulder and all that, I don't feel I carry that. I do my best not to. And I do believe that once, you know, when in that room at Warzone, for example, when you have the top 10 people in that event, skill level is very, very similar to everybody. So I think at that point, it does come down to, you know, going first, terrain, the matchup of armies with missions and stuff. And I think the same goes for Adepticon and Nova and all those type of events is, you know, all the pretty top end people are all similar skill level. And so the rest of it just becomes what they choose to take and how it interacts with the mission. And I think that we in the Southeast, I think we have players, a lot of those that you named and plenty more that can hang in there and compete with anybody.
I hate to burst your bubble, but this particular podcast has more than a couple downloads, so you might not be flying under the radar for too much longer. Here's hoping.
Mike, now after your success here, and I know you do, you have a lot of armies, you play a lot of different styles, as Andrew was talking about earlier. What do you think's next for you? Like, what's your, because all these armies, of course, just don't appear overnight. So what do you kind of have your eye on next? Are you looking forward to the Agents of the Imperium we got dropped, or, you know, you're looking at some of this Chaos stuff?
I'll certainly pick up all the codexes. I enjoy reading those codexes cover to cover. I don't have a whole lot of the Chaos stuff, but I do. Between all of my teammates, we have a lot of different armies. I think Chuck Bethea and I have been playing a combined getting up there close to about 50 years probably. So we've got lots and lots and lots of armies and collections. I know I'm not that old, Andrew. Be quiet.
Yeah, sure.
Right,
but I've certainly borrowed some miniatures from Chuck in the past.
Sure, and it's so having a team that has a lot of access to a lot of different models allows you to have a lot of fun and play styles and try things out. And certainly, things that we try don't always work. I mean, that's why you got to play test and think through things and make changes. But as far as what's next, you know, we've looked at some different things for team tournament at Adepticon. We're probably leaning toward the heretical side. I don't know. We got to make sure we can get everything done. But that's probably what's next for me as far as what I'm working on paint wise. supplies and to get all that together.
That's pretty. I'm actually really looking forward to the all the chaos stuff we're going to get. Like, I mean, you know, we've seen the Magnus model and then the Rubric Marines and stuff. I mean, it's just that just speaks well. You know, I'm a Nurgle player, so I'm really hoping that we get a little love down the road for that. Because it's still, we're talking about competition, but I still play for the love. I still try to play what I like to play. I like to try to make it as competitive as possible. Although I happen to do like the Death Stars, which you guys hate. I know that.
Well, I don't necessarily hate them, but they're just a part of the game right now. And you just gotta, I don't play that personally, but to be honest, because I don't want to, I'm not sure if I'm capable of keeping up with all those characters and who's got what, but it's just part of the game. You just got to be able to fight it and beat it and just know what's out there.
Yeah, it's certainly a, you know, Paul and I have had conversations, you know, sidebars about tactics and list design and all those things. You know, Death Stars do catch a lot of hate, a lot of flack, mostly because, you know, I think they just win a lot of games and people get butthurt, quite honestly. They don't like to lose to Death Stars. And that generates a lot of unwarranted distaste for that list type. I think all three of us would agree that they're not unbeatable. But it kind of sidebars into a question for Twitch. Are there any particular units that you think are, I don't want to say broken. That's a terrible internet term. I don't want to say OP or anything like that. Fun sponges. Talk to me about what you think, what particular units or maybe list designs in particular that you think that the game would benefit from if they maybe didn't exist or had some alteration.
Oh, that's interesting. Horton and I've had that conversation recently too. I think it would be interesting if the game if the game went to only one independent character per unit. I think that would really change how a lot of lists play, not just Death Stars, obviously. I think if you approach the game in the right way and understand that anything can be quote unquote broken if in the right matchup or whatever, like I like you said, the term broken is very, very much an internet term. If people would say that an army of 60 Eldar Jetbikes is really, really broken, but if you come to the table with three Land Raiders, you just get to laugh at them, you know? And so sure. if you properly prepare and
think
and
of the look really on both of those guys' face on round one.
Yeah, sure.
That's what happened. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead, Mike.
No. I think if you approach it the right way and you prepare for the different things in the meta, I think you can get by not dealing with that stuff. But a lot of that's just the attitude that you approach the game with. If you approach the game, you know, that I have to win every single game I'm going to complain about something that beats me, like you guys were talking about the Death Star, complain about it rather than try to figure out how to beat it, then lots of things can be broken. You could probably list at least a broken unit in every single codex that's like that.
Well, it sounds to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds to me that you're saying that there aren't any broken, internet broken units in 40K, and that if you list design and approach each table with the right mindset, play the missions, there shouldn't be any fun sponges. And then if you have the right perspective, there is no such thing as OP. Is that right?
I think that's very accurate. I mean, to say that some units aren't better than others is obviously not true.
Right.
But that's the case. You know, if you have 20 units, obviously something's going to be better than something else. But something's going to be better. You have to look at the context of how you're describing that thing. When you're building a list, you have to look at, you know, the context of your meta, not just the people around you, the what you expect to see, but also the event. Like Warzone being a battle points event, which I definitely prefer that format with 100 people plus, I think it was 108. In five rounds, you have to build a list that's able to max games to have any chance of winning. And Horton and my goal were both top 10 finishes this year. That was our goal. And so if you're trying to achieve that, like, you can't do that by squeaking by with wins in that style of an event. Whereas a win-loss type of format, which I don't prefer, but if you're playing in those tournaments, if you win by 1 point, it's still a win, and that's all that matters. You can build your list differently that way.
Speaking of those missions, you just said you have to list design. You know, if you're going to a Battle Points tournament, the name of the game is Battle Points, and even if you take an L, I mean, I remember you and I played at that Forge Narrative Seasonal, and I eked out a win on paper. I had more points than you at the end of a game,
right?
But you still won the tournament by a pretty commanding margin, because yeah, even if I took that L, it doesn't matter if I lose to Whitaker by 2 points. I still got a ton of battle points, and then I destroyed my other four opponents. You know, you can still win the events. With that in mind,
took him 34 minutes to work that in, Twitch. I just want to let you know that was unscripted. He just did it. Him working in his win.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough. Sure Paul's going to edit that out.
No, I'm leaving it.
I think that's great.
I mean, it's a good point, though. My point is that, like,
oh no, it's a great point.
I'll put whoever's name in there. You can still lose a game and win the tournament overall if you play those missions properly. And so, I want to talk to you about the missions for Warzone. You just said they're very hard to max. Very, very difficult. Mission 5 in particular, with the progressive kill points, I think that's one of the most difficult missions I've ever played to get maximum points on that. Do you like that, or do you think that they should be more straightforward? Just from a generic mission analysis.
I think the hallmark of a very good 40K mission, and this is typical of any board game in my opinion, is that I should be able to read the mission in 15 seconds and understand what I'm supposed to do. But I think it should be very difficult to do whatever I'm supposed to do. And that's been, in a nutshell, I think the more separation that you get in a individual round or individual mission, the better. And so the last mission was my least favorite of them all, but they were all, you know, I think well-written missions. And I think encouraged that, but they were all easy to understand. I didn't hear anybody saying, oh, I didn't understand this, or I lost because of this or whatever. I didn't hear that. I mean, it may have happened for sure, but I didn't hear that.
Going forward into, Adepticon, for example, I assume you'll be at ATC 2017, Lord willing. There are plenty of other events that are not Warzone on a whole bunch of levels.
Sure.
Namely, I think that Warzone, and I'm a little bit cheeky about it, but I say Warzone, we're the only GT in America that plays 7th edition 40K. Every other GT has some kind of variation of it, whether you go full ITC out on the West Coast or kind of a hybridized ITC ruling at Adepticon. How do you approach events when the rules change? Do you have a preference? Do you kind of roll your eyes when you look at a particular FAQ and say, you know, this isn't the game, or do you just kind of take it as a unique and individual challenge?
I think the last statement, when I'm playing in an event, I think the last statement is exactly how I take it. But I think it's important when going to any event, whether it's a local store, a big GT, is you need to understand the event, what it's going to take to do well. You guys talked, I think, on your last episode about the rubric, about understanding the rubric and a paint rubric and you know, painting to the rubric versus not, and the advantages. But I think it's a really positive thing to encourage painted armies of all skill levels just to be there. But the understanding any event and the rules of the event and what they allow is probably, other than establishing a goal, is the next step in how I design lists. I think it's really, really important. But I don't ever just turn down going to an event if I have time to go based on rules or anything.
Let me push on that a little bit, because there's been times when I have read an FAQ for a particular event and said, no, I'm like, you know, we as players vote with our dollars and my attendance. I'm not going to attend that event because I don't like their ruling, their interpretation of this or that. Do you think that there would be something for you personally where you read an FAQ or an update and said, that's just so outlandish, I can't support this event because I disagree too much with the way they've ruled something?
Well, I guess there's always a line where I would probably say that. And I think it is very dangerous for the community to be making up their own FAQs when GW now has one. So that's my personal opinion on that. But that being said, I don't think anything is so far out in left field that I personally wouldn't attend the event. I prefer, now that GW has an FAQ, to do basically what you guys did and reprint that FAQ and, you know, add a couple little modifications or adjustments to that, or clarifications probably is the better word, to that and roll with that rather than try to reinvent the wheel. But it wouldn't stop me from going to an event, because, I mean, Adepticon will probably use some combination of GWs and ITC, I would think. I'm guessing there. But I mean, obviously, I've been to Adepticon the past 10 or 11 years. So
I want to ask you a couple of things. about list designs, which I think is one of the most helpful things for anybody who's listening to a 40K podcast, especially if they're trying to pick up competitive tips. From a list design standpoint, I know that we all have our kind of individual theories. Is there something that you hate playing against from a competitive, like when you walk up to a table and you see it on the other side of the table, you're like, oof, that is a list design that is really good and I don't like to play against it? That's question number two. Well, number one. And number two, do you have kind of an underlying list philosophy? I know we talked about spamming earlier. Is that kind of just aggressive speed or, you know, forcing decision points? Is there a list archetype that you prefer to play with, and then one that you really don't like playing against from a competitive standpoint?
When you say don't like playing against, are you meaning? Like,
for example, when I walk up to the table, I mean, I'm a for the last 8 months I've been playing drop pods. I've been playing 11, 12 drop pods, dreadnoughts, yada yada. I really don't like running into a war convocation. Tons of haywire, lots of strength modification. They don't have any issue dispatching a bunch of dreadnoughts and drop pods. That's kind of what I mean. Is there a list archetype in the meta right now, or a list style that you think is like,
seen,
wow?
Or at least that's played frequently that does give you pause?
Yeah.
I think even though it is sort of a quote unquote net style list, I think double Storm Surge Tau, with both of them having invulnerable saves, can engage a ton of units, and is still very, very difficult to engage in hand to hand because of all the stomps. I think that list scared my Screamer list for sure. I wanted no part of that, and that list is why I didn't play Swooping Hawks again, is because the Hawks had no way of dealing with a lot of the heavy monstrous creature Tau lists that were out there. But it turned out that everyone thought that the Taunar was better than the Storm Surge, which I disagree with. I think the Storm Surges are better, in my opinion. But that list archetype scared me going to that tournament. I think it's a very competitive list. I think it can be good against lots and lots of different things. And there's lots of ways to build around it. Most people, you know, throw Riptide Wings in there and things, but there's other things to mix and match with that can still be very, very effective.
It's true just for Monster Mash Tau in general, with all their bigger suits that they're can be kind of a spoiler army.
Yeah, for sure. And especially if you combine it with things that maybe people aren't prepared for. Riptides, I think, are fine. I think Optimized Stealth Cadres are a very, very good choice. I'm personally not a huge fan of broadsides because I don't like a static element that's that many points, at least. But then even combining that with Eldar maybe or doing something different with that, I think can be really, really effective.
Let me ask you real quick follow-up while we're in this section, because, you know, I think that a lot of people, you know, maybe I say a lot of people, I know for me personally, I was kind of ringing the bell, ding dong. Tau is more or less dead. A lot of the assaulting had a reserve. You know, they already had huge difficulties with MSU corn lists and demon lists with the dog rush and all the rest of it. Do you think that that's overplayed? Do you think that's overblown? And that Tau still is in kind of that elite top three or four books in 40K right now?
I do. I think that. I know that Horton and I've talked about that a lot with his corn in the dog rush. And you know, he feels he's competitive with it, but it's not a game that he could just run over. And because the Storm Surges can engage so many units, along with the stomps and stuff, it's hard to keep them in combat, and it's virtually impossible to kill them with a 4-up, 5-up, and the ability to, you know, assign wounds to both models and things is rough when they're two in a unit. But it's the assaulting out of reserves and things, again, you have to build lists to do that. I think if you're dealing with all Riptides or all Riptides and broadsides and Storm Surges, then you may be in trouble. But I think if you can lay out some Kroot or some drones or you know, what have you as a shield for some of that, I think you can still beat it. And even like the Assault Terminators assaulting from reserve is really, really tough to do anything to something that has a 4-up and a 5-up save.
And those things you're talking about are commonly available within that Tau list. It's not like they're sacrificing anything to pick up some of this stuff. Right. To prepare for it. I think that's what you're saying.
It is. And I mean, on that note, I think Kroot are one of the most underrated units in the game.
Amen. Preach.
They're very, 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 very flexible. They're very, very inexpensive. They're OBSEC. They can do a lot of, I mean, you know, there's
outflanking.
Just,
10 points, sniper rounds.
He can put sniper rounds on them, all kinds of stuff. And I'm a big fan of Crew.
You know, you heard it here first on the Forge the Narrative podcast. Tau are still pretty good.
Tau are still up there. and the Super Tuna is 300 points under costed.
So. I don't know if it's official, but it's probably close.
That's my opinion. I have a few of them. So.
Just a couple.
Well, Mike, is there anything else you'd like to share with us? I mean, this has been fascinating for me, and hopefully some folks are starting to pick up at least the concepts of what you do to win a lot of games and play. I mean, not only that, you win a lot of games. You're a great sport. Like, you're someone that I've always enjoyed hanging out with and spending time with at these things, you know, all over the country. Every place I've encountered you has been great. So you are very competitive, and you still keep that spirit of everything that we kind of appreciate around here. So I want to say thank you for doing that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I don't want to blow smoke up your butt. I think that Paul and I were actually talking about you outside of your presence. You know, if you play this game competitively long enough, especially on the national scene, somebody's always going to have a bad word to say about you, whether it's, oh, that guy's, you know, he's a jerk, whatever it is. Like I said, if you play at a high level long enough, people you're going to tick off somebody, and they're going to say bad things about you.
You die a hero or live long enough to be the villain.
Exactly. I think you've dodged that bullet so far. I've never heard anyone say an ill word about you, Mike Twitchell. And so that's high praise to you for someone who wins as much as you do to not have anybody say any bad things about you. I think that's great.
Well, appreciate it. I mean, it's you like I said earlier, you got to approach all of this with the right attitude. And I certainly, some of my best friends play this game. And I have lots and lots of other friends that I wouldn't necessarily consider best, so to speak. But I can pick up right where we left off 6 months ago and get to know them and all that kind of thing. And I think that's first in this. I mean, it is a hobby first. It's you know, playing toy soldiers. And while any of us can get competitive and get frustrated at certain times, you have to put that in perspective. And I think that's why you surround yourself with good people that do it as well. Is, you know, I've got a great team I play with, and we have a good time together. And that's really what it's all about. And if we can win some games and take some trophies home, that's awesome. But if not, you know, we'll just buy another drink.
I can appreciate that approach. Andrew, thanks for joining us tonight. And Mike, thanks for coming on the show. Hopefully we can have you on again sometime, maybe get Horton as well, because I know his approach to list design is something that I know that I sometimes struggle with. Like, how did he come up with that? How did he think about that? You know, and it's kind of fun to watch him play and put things together. I'd like to have him on too.
Absolutely. Well, so
my big shout out to Horton is we're sort of opposites. He is one that more or less has played the same style list and sort of locks in on something and gets very, very dominant in how he plays that list. Where I adjust lists and do things depending on the meta and the tournament. So we approach the game completely differently. And I've said to everybody, I think Horton's a better in-game player than I am because of that. But it's something that we approach the game differently and have a good time doing it.
Cool. Well, that's quite the brain trust between the two of you. So here's hoping that we can get him on soon.
Cool. Sure thing. Well, I'm happy to help you.
Well, Mike, you're on the first player spotlight episode of Forge Narrative. Thank you very much.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks, guys.
Have a good rest of your night.
Thanks, Twitch. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.